Moving on to the SWOT analysis, to better understand the strength, weakness, opportunity and threat analysis, let's see if I'm evaluating an employee on a SWOT analysis and trying to identify his training need through this method. How do I look at it? So what are the strengths of this employee which I may have observed through meetings, skill audits, various one-on-one discussions, informal chats? He has a strong background in management techniques. And he has experience in using project. So perhaps I will not give him project training. And in terms of managerial techniques for the time, I will not get into behavioral, managerial, business kind of techniques. What are the opportunities for him? Many candidates have been selected for the project. So he will obviously be in a very competitive environment. And there are higher levels of jobs available. So if I add to his skills and work on him as a team member, as an employee, then I will be able to give him career progression where he can compete with many candidates who have been selected for the project, and he can perhaps fill in one of those higher level job positions. So now, keeping these strengths and these opportunities in mind, let me see what are the weaknesses and the threats which also I should be mindful of, so that eventually he can move into this higher level job position available for him. So his weakness is that he has not worked in this country. So maybe he's an employee who's been sent from Bangalore or Hyderabad to California, to the Silicon Valley. So he has not worked in the country. So what challenges does that pose? There could be a slight communication issue. There could be a slight accent issue. There possibly is a lack of understanding in how you deal with the people in that country. It may be a different kind of, it is a different kind of culture. So how do people respond here? How do people expect you to respond here? There could be a difference in terms of the way you dress, something as basic as how you dress. So there is a grooming aspect involved for someone working in a different country, and grooming is also very important at workplaces, and is unfamiliar with the current version of the project. So he has experience in using the project, but there is a more updated current version, and perhaps he doesn't, you know, he's not up the curve there. So he can do with some amount of project upgradation, skill upgradation there, maybe not right from the basic, because he's clearly aware of the basics, but at a specialized level. So having not worked in the country, he's probably not familiar with the rules and regulations here. He's not probably familiar with the timelines here. There could be certain communication barriers, certain grooming issues, certain ways of dealing with people. So he has to upgrade his understanding in terms of fitting in and blending in the culture here, and blending in the work ecosystem and environment here, and also upgrade his specialized knowledge in terms of the current working model of the project. What are the threats? Again, he lacks client's industry knowledge. So not only is he a little unfamiliar with the country, also now he has been put on a project where in the past he worked in the oil and gas domain for the IT firm where he was working in Bangalore, or maybe sitting in Hyderabad, he was working with he was on a project at a client site, and it was an infrastructure firm. Now he has been moved to an industry which is working on in the pharmaceutical industry. So he is now working on an industry where he knows absolutely nothing, or very little, and probably possibly nothing. So he needs to not only be put through getting his awareness about the culture and the style of working in this country in place, but he also needs to be put through some sort of knowledge for getting to know about the pharmaceutical industries, what are the IT requirements in this industry, what are the nuances he will have to keep in mind. And other candidates may have worked and have better client industry knowledge. So while he is competing with these many candidates for a higher level job position, while he has a strong management background, while he knows about the project, they beat him when it comes to industry knowledge, where he will have to spend a little bit of time coming up the curve on the pharmaceutical industry, whereas these people already know that. So given this whole analysis of strength, weakness, opportunity and threat, I can then productively arrive at the fact that I need to give him some nature of current technical skill for this project, current version of the project, not basic skills since he already knows about the project. I need to make him familiar with this country's working style, and I need to make him familiar with this country's the industry, pharmaceutical industry, the project that I have assigned him to. So you see how I have arrived at some basic project training, cultural training and industry training. These are the trainings versus giving him a general training where he's also learning management, where he's also learning the very basic technological things about the project. I'm not giving him any of those. I'm giving him this training, and at this stage, I'm also not giving him leadership training. I'm letting him come up the curve on this. Basic management techniques he knows. Maybe that is something to think about in the future. I will first make him comfortable in the country with the industry, with the domain knowledge, and I will think of leadership later on. Right now, I'm not dealing with leadership. So I'm not touching on leadership at all right now. Right now, I'm just grooming him and hoping that he will try to reach one of those higher level jobs out of the many candidates who have been assigned to this project. So this is how I have done a SWOT analysis and arrived at the appropriate training need. Now, successful teams and organizations put a lot of effort into developing future leaders, and they rely heavily on choosing, please focus on these two words, the right people to involve. When we were talking about project management and how you identify a project manager, it was very, very important to focus on identifying the right person. So it is very important that organizations focus on the right person. If I recruit 20 people, and I put all 20 people through leadership training. Some may want to be leaders, some may not want to be leaders, some may want to be leaders but not really have the general traits or the acumen to acquire it. And some may. So instead of wasting resources on all 20, I should spend time through these various means to figure out who are my most able and willing people out of these 20. Are there three of them? Then let me put these three through leadership training. It is very common in organizations now, and as you enter the work world, you will realize that for yourself also, that it is becoming extremely common for organizations to have something called fast tracking of employees. Now, fast tracker employees are employees who joined at par with the others at their level of hierarchy, but have been put on a leadership pace and a career growth pace, which is a multiplier effect versus the rate at which the others will grow. So it will involve double promotions, it will involve higher responsibility, it will involve higher packages and bonuses. Now these are people who not only want to be leaders but have the capability of being leaders as well, and hence the career path for them, you may be indicated a career, everyone else may be indicated a career path on an average which takes you from management trainee to vice president in 10 years. This fast tracker is shown a career path and is on a career path where he moves from management trainee to vice president in 5 years. His career path is distinctly different. So this is a person who will get intense leadership training, who will be thrown into leadership opportunity positions, and who will be groomed to be a leader, not the entire batch of management trainees who join with him, not all 20. So various organizations structure it differently, but you clearly have, most good organizations have a pool where they, you know that these are the fast tractors who are being groomed for higher responsibility and leadership position and higher growth than other people based on certain traits and capabilities that they have clearly expressed and shown, not just expressed, also displayed. So managers look for ways to train staff on a daily basis. There is ongoing regular training, there is specific intense training, but there is also day-to-day training. So if I am a project manager and if I have identified that person X in my team is the person who has been identified as a fast tracker, who is going to be put through this intense leadership training over the career span, and who's going to get these leadership opportunities and will grow faster than his peers, I will also take him into meetings where I expose him to leadership. I will also give him additional responsibility where I expose him to leadership. I will take him along with me where he observes my leadership style. I will nominate him for conferences and networking events and send him all over the world where he gets exposed to these leadership things, which is going to happen on a daily basis. It is not one time. It is something which is going to happen on a daily basis, on an ongoing basis as well. And when setting training objectives or targets, organizations need to ensure to set SMART goals. What is SMART? SMART stands for specific goals. Be as specific about what you're trying to achieve. Be able to measure what you are going to achieve. Otherwise, it could be very, very arbid. Be sure that what you are trying to measure, what your specific objective is achievable, available and achievable. Don't shoot for the stars straight away. First, have a goal to build a rocket. Without the rocket, you cannot reach the stars. Have a goal which is realistic. So, I know rockets can be built. It's a realistic goal. But if I say, no, I'll just, you know, upgrade a plane, a regular plane to go up there, it's an unrealistic goal. So, have a goal which is realistic as well, ambitious but realistic. And have a goal which is time bound. So, I want to go to the moon. But I want to go to the moon in this century, in my lifetime. When do I want to go to the moon? So, it's very useful when we are talking about SMART goal setting and that becoming a part of the whole skill upgradation. A lot of people refer to President Kennedy's speech which he gave at NASA, where he spoke about wanting to put his countrymen on the moon. Where does he want to go? He's being specific. He wants to go to the moon. In this decade, his time frame is that in this decade, he will go to the moon. It is tough, but we will get there. So, it is measurable that did we get to the moon within this decade or not. And then he's also following it up by making it realistic by specifying that NASA over the next 5 years. So, someone may think getting to the moon is unrealistic and why did he even mention it? It's like wanting to do something which is unimaginable. To substantiate his goal and to make it as realistic and achievable as possible, he also mentions that over the next 5 years, NASA plans to double its number of scientists and technicians, plans to increase its salary budget by $60 billion, which means a lot of know-how coming in, plans to spend $60 million on facilities, etc., plans to double its outlay on salaries and plans to spend $1 billion. And we're talking about which decade. So $1 billion then would be, I don't know how many trillions today. Plans to spend $1 billion on new space technology. So now when I took a specific goal, reaching the moon, measured it by did I reach the moon within this decade, gave it a time frame of getting it to there within this decade. I also made my goal achievable and realistic by specifying all the effort that is going into making this goal achievable. Doubling the number of scientists in the next 5 years. Increasing your salary allocation. Spending $60 billion on facilities. $1 billion on new space technology. $60 million on new facilities and $1 billion on new space technologies. So, clearly I added elements of my homework, of knowledge, which made my goal that much more achievable and realistic as well versus thinking of it as, oh, this is wishful thinking, this is never really going to happen. So, it is important that when we are talking about training, when we are talking about any skill, we keep goals very much in tandem with the SMART philosophy. Now, what are the ways of teaching and what are the various teaching and learning methods that could be adopted by trainers and which are effective training techniques? These could be lectures. Right now, I'm indulging in a lecture, an online lecture. These could be classroom lectures with dialogue happening. These could be online lectures, where you are visually being aided to understand a certain subject rather than you simply reading a book. Seminars. So, seminars are very useful where various kinds of presentations happen, various industry information is laid out, a lot of your interaction with other people happen, people from various segments come in and share their experiences and share their details. So, seminars are a good networking platform where a lot of knowledge you would not have got exposed to otherwise happens. They are also a consolidated platform which are dedicated for presentations by various people. So, you sit in a whole day and you get presentations from people from different segments with different experiences, with different knowledge to share. Small tutorial groups. So, you could have a small group where tutorials are being held, which is maybe a slightly more focused group. So, a lecture may involve 75 of you or 100 of you in a lecture theater. A small tutorial group gives that much more focused attention. It manages to address that many more questions and queries of each individual person. Maybe each individual person in the group can be assigned a project on which they have to work, on which makes it that much more practical for them, and where, you know, there is constant monitoring happening by the tutor. Workshops. So the same way that I am conducting this online module discussion, I do classroom workshops as well. Workshops are not simply dialogues or lectures which are one-on-one with me speaking and the audience sitting and listening. Workshops mean conveying a message using various audiovisual tools, using various interactive team activities, group activities, pairing activities to get your message across, to get your skill knowledge across to people. So the questions and answers happening, quizzes happening, videos being shown. So there are various interactive ways in which workshops can be effective. And then you have your T group. So as you see, the modes of information dissemination are limitless, and there are just so many ways in which training can happen. In your lectures, you use audiovisual aids. You emphasize key points on a flip chart. So the way I am using a presentation in the background, I am being able to very specifically pinpoint things. While I'm discussing them, I'm being able to guide you to the here blackboard, here slides, to very specific areas where I would like you to focus. And this is something that you will be able to refer back to. So in an offline lecture, in a classroom lecture, you may have the physical presentation next to you, or you may be jotting down things which are you find more important. Whereas here, you will be able to refer back to them at any point of time in the video recording. You prepare celluloid slides presented via Carrizal project and screen. So the same way that I am presenting it here, which is recorded for you, is what is done in a classroom lecture as well. And projection of written or printed matter via Episcope. So there are various ways. Look at me, I'm using a slider and a little red point to pinpoint and take you exactly to where I would like you to focus. So this is a typical mode of a lecture. We're all very familiar with how lectures can be conducted and how your attention could be drawn to very specific areas of information as part of your training. In your audiovisual aids, you also have transparencies via overhead projector, which is what we are using right now. And increasing nowadays via computer-based system, notably Microsoft PowerPoint application. The presentation that I'm using right now and the chapters that I have been discussing in all the modules have used Microsoft's PPTX. The extension for these files is PPTX. We are using the latest version of Windows 8 Microsoft PowerPoint to bring these presentations to you. It is a very creative tool. It is a very simple tool where you can make changes, you can edit, you can bring in various colors, you can use different graphics, you can use charts, you can use text, you can use different colors to bring across your message, to divert, to create distinctions, to divert the attention. And definitely, when you make something visually more appealing versus just cutting and pasting the pages of the book and putting them up on the slide, when you do make something visually more appealing, the mind does retain it that much more than not retaining it. So And of course, the distribution of pre-printed supported material or handouts. So it's possible that if this was a classroom lecture, here you can refer back to this at any point of time. But if this was a classroom lecture, chances are that you would have a physical printout of this presentation, either supplied by the lecturer or you having gone and downloaded it yourself and you making your notes next to it. Even if you did not have the presentation of the 100% of the slides, because sometimes that is not available to you, possibly you would have a concise manual of 10-15 of these slides. So there are places where we conduct these workshops where of course we have our presentation and our slide in the background, but what is provided to the people, the audience and the participants in the workshop is a handout which is about 20% of what the slide contains, which contains the major key areas, description being in the full master PPT with the facilitator, and they hand out, they can make their notes, they can write down their learnings, they can put down their questions, and it gives them a general flow where when they look at those serious headings, those major headings, those bullet points, those summaries, then they can think back to the master and recollect what was there in the master presentation or refer back to a book. So you will have a lot of these materials, and a lot of times these materials are very good reference points to refer back. I attended a training which I found very useful. Now I'm on the job and I wish I could refer back to what I had picked up in that training regarding that current project version, because I can't remember straight away. If you have your handout and your material with me and you have put down your little points and notes, then you will immediately be able to refer back to it and be able to remember and recollect and use that information. Now, as I already mentioned to you, let me emphasize, S stands for specific, M stands for measurable, A stands for achievable, R stands for realistic, T stands for a time-bound target. We are talking not just a target, we are talking, keep in mind, time-bound target. So when President Kennedy spoke about NASA's mission to the moon, he talked about in this decade to the moon. And he also made it realistic and achievable by mentioning NASA's plans of the various expenditure layout or the manpower enhancement and over the next 5 years. So you have, this is how a SMART goal has to be laid out, and this is how one arrives at a SMART goal. I mentioned earlier already the training cycle that is there. You identify the training through your meetings, through your skill audits, through your one-on-one discussions, informal discussions, through your SWOT analysis. You identify the need. After you identify the need, you deliver the training. Whether it is lecture form, whether it is online form, whether it is a workshop, whether it is a one-on-one coaching mentoring, whether it is an offsite, whether it is a seminar, and then you evaluate the training. Has this in some way been able to get me the desired impact of what I wanted to get? So it is very important to be able to evaluate the training, because without that there is no return on investment for the employee and no return on investment for the employer either. So there will be certain elements even in the most subjective behavioral trainings which are difficult to define. Even things like anger management, even things like communications, etc., which are not always in tabular form, even there you will have various tools and modes to be able to measure a direct impact in terms of, has this person's communication improved? Has this, the response time to this person improved because of effective communication? So it is very important that we don't forget the evaluation portion of training, because we would then be leaving the whole exercise hanging in space a little bit, and it might just amount to a checklist exercise where we are ticking boxes. So we don't want to just tick boxes that yes, we conducted this training. We want to make sure that the training gave me the desired result and led to the desired effectivity. So when we have done, we are done with identifying and delivering the training, as I keep stressing, it is very important to not lose out on the evaluation aspect of the training as well. So we need to see, has the training delivered the identified need? We have to have a correlation, and has that individual need been met, And if it has been met, has it been met completely? So typically you would see that in typical training sessions where you have multiple audiences and one or two facilitators, there will be something like a feedback form at the end of it, a very concise feedback form where the trainer, training material and the entire flow is being evaluated by the audience. Sometimes they put down their names on the evaluation sheet. Sometimes they don't even have to do that if people don't want to be open about what they said about the trainer or the training session. However, they have very specific boxes in terms of one to rate on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being excellent, 1 being poor. Rate on a scale of poor to very, very exceptionally good. So if you have these various rating scales and you have trainer communication, trainer style, content, the flow, all of these things, and then you have suggestion boxes, then that can be a very helpful way in which you evaluate whether a training was useful, whether a training need was met, whether it was met fully, whether you see its application after the training is over and done with. Then you have to see, was the training event satisfactory? You have to also see the general hygiene of the training event. Was it conducted seamlessly? Was the trainer knowledgeable? Was the training infrastructure proper or not? Were the desired outcomes and messages that you wanted stated, were they met? So it's not good enough just to have a slide and a presentation in the background and just list out what is to be said. Has what your message was, what your skill was, what your technical knowledge was, has the team member absorbed that and connected it to their workplace applicability? Because unless there is workplace applicability, whether it is leadership training, behavioral training, or technical project training, you will not have a return on investment unless that is done. And then finally, was the training conducted at the right level? So when we were earlier talking about junior level LAN administrator training or client server training, etc. Now, it may be training which my junior or mid-management staff may require. So it wouldn't be correct to send a senior management project manager for that, perhaps. So you have to also see not only the training, but has the training been conducted at the right level? So when I'm conducting my leadership training, have I identified the right people to put through this training? Because otherwise it would really be a waste of resources. And were my resources adequate? Did I have the resources to take this training effectively through the training flow, or were there constraints because of which I either could not send the required number of employees, or I could not send the employee for the required number of days, or I could not put him through the various cycles of the training? There are various phases of the training and I could not put the employee through the various phases. So I have to evaluate based on all these various aspects. Now, knowledge management is a very useful thing in organizations these days. I may not be able to send all my employees for all kinds of trainings, but even if I do send a few employees for certain trainings, then it is possible for these few employees to actually share that information in various ways. One would be on the job. Another thing could be that someone has gone for a training and he could come back and make a presentation to the rest of the team, so that the rest of the team, without having to take time out to go for the training, is getting a concise 1 hour, 2 hour presentation on this 2 day training that this person attended. There could be company wikis. Now, there are various companies coming up with internal company wikis where people share information about the knowledge they have acquired, trainings they have been put through, workshops they have been put through, and it becomes a source for other people to actually tap into and gain knowledge from. So it is important that retaining and sharing organization knowledge is also adding to my organizational success. As I said, there are always limitations of resources. When you are sending someone for a training, you're taking away time from your regular work hours. So it is not going to be possible to send 100% of the employees, and it is good to have a good sharing system, an organized sharing system, where even if one person is undergoing a formal training, he or she is in a position to be able to share aspects of his training with 20, 30, 100 other people at various points of time. And managing knowledge is a great way to provide development of opportunities and career enhancements. People who are receiving the training, of course, are very, very lucky. But those who are not receiving can also share in this information, sharing knowledge, sharing and hope to upgrade their skills. And another powerful way to retain knowledge within the organization is through successful planning. So where I spoke about a company wiki, where I spoke about a person has been for a very informative training, a very prized training, he comes back and he speaks about it himself or shares what he learnt in a certain seminar in an organized way, in a concise way, then that is also a very successfully planned way of sharing and managing knowledge and managing information. Now, again, I will stress on this distinction between formal training, classroom training, workshop training, online training, and coaching and mentoring. So, coaching and mentoring assumes a slightly more one-on-one nature, where it is more individual, it is more advisory, it is more pushing in the right direction, and doesn't always have to be formal. It can also be informal. So a formal classroom training is very, very, is a little bit rigid in terms of the time commitment, your presence, the way it is conducted, the way it is facilitated. Informal could be through various dialogues, maybe over a lunch with your coach, over a, evening coffee with your coach, or in a general informal chit chat where you just walk by the person's desk and, you sit and talk to them. So sometimes learning can happen in an informal way also, where staff are being coached and mentored, and they acknowledge this and they really see that this organization is investing in me, this organization is taking me seriously and cares about me. So if they know that there is a mentoring, coaching attitude in this organization, and it doesn't have to be that you bring in very expensive, exceedingly senior coaches from the external world or hire them. You can also have a system where gradually you are grooming supervisory staff to become coaches and mentors, and they are taking on and assigning 2, 2, 3, 3 employees in their teams to them, who are sort of becoming their people who are being mentored and coached by them. So it creates an informal yet very, very healthy environment for sharing of information, for guidance, for advice, and creates, also makes the people who are being coached and mentored feel responsible towards their junior staff and towards staff that where they feel that, okay, my organization and my supervisors invested in me, coached me, mentored me, added, identified my skill upgradation needs and responded to those. So it is my responsibility to also extend the same to my next level and to my junior staff, and it would add to my leadership and to my career growth if I actually extend that support and advice to my junior staff as well. So it creates a sense of responsibility in the segment which is being coached, which is being mentored, to onward pass on coaching and mentoring to their juniors as well. Distance learning is becoming very, very key and very important. I mean, for that matter, even what we are doing right now in terms of me having this dialogue and having this online module discussion with you is about distance learning. A lot of you may be sitting in other parts of the country or in other parts of the world, people cannot always be in a certain location. A lot of you may be people who are working alongside studying. So then you cannot take away 1 year, you cannot take away 2 years from your work situations, from your work positions, to be able to enhance your skill and enhance your knowledge. Hence, you are resorting to something which is open and distant learning. In fact, Velinkar is one of the most prominent distant learning centers, where you have lakhs and lakhs of people enrolled for these online modules and who are very effectively learning through these. You can refer back, you can learn from them in a more visually appealing way perhaps than rather just reading a book, which is a good reference point. So this source of learning is programmed learning, which has paved the way for design an interactive open learning workbook. So here we are recording something in placing. There could also be a form where we are online and there is a dialogue happening between the participants and me. So that is a very interesting and flexible. So if you want to refer to a certain module and you are a signed up student, then you really don't need to sit within work hours, within your day hours. You could also refer, log in and refer to it at 2 in the night, because now this is on the system and you can use it as and when your work and your other commitments permit permit you to do that. You could look at more chapters and more modules in a certain time frame versus another time. So the kind of flexibility that is extended to you is phenomenal when it comes to distance learning. Then we have e-learning, which of course, as the name suggests, is online learning. So today, if you just go online on the internet, we were talking about the Wellinker distance learning, we were talking about the intranet, the internal Wellinker system, where the distance learning signed up programs would have, students would have their login, user IDs and logins and passwords, and it is exclusive and an outsider cannot access, versus you go to the internet, and these days there is so much learning on the internet by just typing out various requirements. You go to video YouTube, there are videos right, left and center. There are overseas, in fact outside India and in a lot of the developed parts of the world, e-learning has taken over classroom learning and physical learning, and that is the most prominent form of learning which is happening now, and it is probably the single most exciting new technique, not least because of its potential to open up still newer methodologies such as virtual reality. So I was recently speaking to a facilitator who is one of the founding members of a very large training firm in the across the world called Franklin Covey, and she's one of the founding members of Franklin Covey in India, and she's a very senior personnel in the neuro-linguistic programming understanding domain, which is NLP, which is very, very high when it comes to your intense behavioral training. It is very high in the hierarchy, and she's been around for 25 years facilitating this, so she's a very senior personnel, and she was suggesting a course recommending a course very highly, and I said, you know, where did you go and do it, and did you do it in the country or overseas, because the trainer that she mentioned was an international trainer, and she said, no, I just went online and did the course. So you see how e-learning made it possible for her, and that is the course that she was recommending most highly, and she didn't have to think twice. Just from the convenience of your home, you can tap into this e-learning mode and you can pull out. So there are paid for trainings online, there are also absolutely free trainings online, and some of them are absolute treasure. So there is nothing to say that free trainings online are not effective and not really good, and it is only the paid for trainings. You have to really pick and find what really works for you, and there's a lot of good resource which is absolutely free and easily available. So to summarize, there has to be commitment from the management towards training. The sponsors and the stakeholders have to appreciate that training is as integral as your day-to-day business operations. And management's commitment to training and development of people is a major factor in determining the ongoing success of a team. And changes that are happening at a workplace can be addressed through training. So if I'm an IT firm, and now I have bought over, I used to work with a vendor, and now I have actually entirely bought out the vendor and brought all the people from this vendor on board and their processes on board. That is going to require training for my existing employees to understand how this vendor's processes works, to amalgamate and blend in with the employees of this vendor. So any nature of workplace change would require training. My project has been upgraded to a current level, so I need to know about the current level of technology. So there are training needs. A project manager may identify them, but unless he gets in a buy-in from the management to share resources for this training, to share time and to share budget for these training needs, it may not be successful. So I will again stress that the management's commitment to training is very, very critical and is a major factor and must be there for any organization to keep growing. Thank you.